Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We would like to welcome you to this meeting of the Roofing Technical Advisory Committee, concurrent with the Structural Technical Advisory Committee. We would like to begin by calling roll. Roofing Tech, if you would answer by saying here. Brian Swope.
Here.
Bob Boyer.
Here.
Mark Zano.
Here.
Jimmy Buckner.
Here.
George Ebersold.
Here.
Bill Schultz.
Here.
Lorraine Ross. Karen Worsick. Richard Goff.
Here.
Bert Logan.
Here.
And Gaspar Rodriguez.
Here.
Thank you. We do have a quorum for the Roofing Tech. Roofing Tech, while I have your attention, let's go ahead and approve the agenda. We do have two alterations. We're going to eliminate items four. We're going to eliminate items four and five from the agenda as we covered those last week in our meetings. So with the amended agenda, do we have a motion to approve to move forward?
Offer make a motion to approve.
And this, who's speaking, please?
Goff.
Mr. Goff, thank you. Do we have a second? Roofing Tech?
That's what I'll second.
Yeah. Second.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
It's Gaspar.
Okay, thank you, Gaspar. All those in favor of the motion to approve the amended agenda, please vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next, we were going to approve the previous minutes. Those are not yet completed. We will handle those at the next meeting of the Roofing Tech. Now we would like to get to the Structural Tech. Please answer by saying here for roll call. Jim Schock?
Here.
Warner Chang?
Here.
David Compton?
Here.
Chris Bartleman?
This is Michael Gerasio. I'm standing in for Chris.
Thank you, Michael, for letting us know.
Thank you.
Jamie Gascon?
Jenny Fernandez, I'll call for Jamie Gascon.
What was your first name, Mr. Fernandez?
Eddie Fernandez.
Andy, thank you so much.
Eddie.
Joseph Hetzel?
Here.
Joe Kim?
Here.
Dan Leverage?
Here.
C.W. McCumber?
Here.
Craig Perino?
Here.
Steve Strawn? We do have a quorum for the Structural Tech as well. Also,
Dick Wilhelm standing up, Steve Strawn.
Thank you, Dick. We've got note of that on the record. Okay, the agenda for the Structural Tech also will be amended to remove items C1 and C2. With that in mind, we have a motion to approve the amended agenda.
Leverage move to approve.
Second?
Compton second.
Leverage Compton second. Thank you. All those in favor of the amended agenda, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Also, the minutes from the previous meeting will be reviewed at the next meeting as these are not yet completed for your review. Our item to review today is to accept the final draft report for a research project titled Cost Impact of the 2017 FBC EB Section 707.3.2 Roof Diaphragm Re-roofing Requirements. Mo, would you like to?
Yeah. This is Mo Magani for the building. I'm sorry. Good afternoon. Just to refresh your memory, just last month we We mainly reviewed the interim report on this project, and today we are mainly would be reviewing the final reports. The principal investigator, Raymond Issa, Dr. Raymond Issa, is on the line to give us a presentation on the final reports. As you recall, the objective of this project is mainly to look at the cost impact of the code requirements of section 607.3.2, roof diaphragm, and looking at six type of roofs and looking at different way of compliance. So, Dr. Issa, are you on the line?
Yes. Right. Thank you, Mo.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. So we're going to be talking, like Mo said, about the evaluation of the cost impact of the 2017 Florida Building Code, existing building, section 707.3.2, roof diaphragm re-roofing. This is a team. We have myself, Arin Salafon, which is a special engineer, and FRSA representatives working on this. These were the issues we were asked to look at, to look at the requirements under the provisions that require that the whole roof be replaced or strengthened where more than 50% of the roof diaphragm is removed in zones where the ultimate design wind speed exceeds 150 miles per hour and the diaphragms and connections in their existing condition are not capable of resisting at least 75% of those wind loads. This is the section 707.3.2 of the code.
Dr. Issa, could you back up to the last screen?
Okay.
Something I wanted to point out that's a mistake that I just saw. It's not where more than 50% of the roof diaphragm is removed. It's more than 50% of the roof covering.
Okay. Covering. Okay.
And who was speaking, please, to make those comments?
Mike Silvers, FRSA Technical Director.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. So that's the code. What the code says about in section 707.3.2. So the scope of work was to look at six different type of roof decks built prior to the year March 1, 2002, as identified by Factory Mutual and the National Roofing Contractor Association. So we're looking at wood, metal and steel bar joists, lightweight concrete and bar joists, gypsum and space joists, spectrum on space joists and lightweight engineered composite deck systems. The second step in the scope of work was to design corrective protocols for the six roof deck types as selected under task one for each of the following three scenarios, ending up with 18 different cases to look at. The three scenarios were enhanced fastening of the roof deck, roof-to-wall connections, enhanced fastening, entire roof deck replacement. And number three was to establish cost estimates for the cost of performing aforementioned engineering protocols for replacement through bids from three Florida licensed roofing contractors for all scenarios. So we delivered an interim report in March, and this is the final report. So the methodology we used was we came up with a prototype building with a 10,000 square foot roof, and that was designed to get the three contractors to give us bids on the six roof types, repair protocols, and the three variations of those. Quest Engineering developed the protocols and limitations to bid. You can see the bid documents in the appendices of the report. Some notes to go with the cost tables that I'm going to be showing you is that for all six roof deck types, the following cost items need to be taken into consideration in addition to the numbers we have. The cost for relocation of needed occupants and content, which depends on the use. The cost for loss of business, which again depends on the use of the building. The cost for isolating dust from occupied areas if contents are not relocated, that depends on the use also. The cost to repair or replace ceilings depends on the use. The cost of temporary watertight or phasing of the work. And that should have been factored already in the bid. The cost of engineering for each protocol, which we estimated at $8,250. For deck types with rigid insulation for replacement, which were A, B, D, and F, the cost for the cover board that is required over the polycyclic insulation is factored in the bid, and cost if replacing triggers energy code requirements would apply across the board regardless of whether it's a diaphragm frame. For lightweight insulated concrete deck type A, the cost of required tapered insulation for replacement on LWIC fill is factored in the bid, so that's already in there. But gypsum deck type D, cost for relocation, which is mandatory, depends on building use type, and the cost for removal and replacement of ceiling ductwork, wiring, etc., depends on the building use type and cannot all be pinned on the diaphragm frame roof type. But this is a summary of the bids we received from the three bidders for the roof types and protocols. So across the top, you see the six types of roof. Across the vertical, you see the three scenarios we talked about. There was always a base bid involved in each one of these. So one stands for bidder one, two stands for bidder two, three stands for bidder three. Where there was an asterisk means there was no bid item. And, I mean, where there's a plus, there's no bid items included. And when there's an asterisk, the conditions and exclusions are included in the bid. And the next table is probably the most important table, which looks at the, what we did is we took the mean bid value for each one of the bidders and put those in the table, and then we did analysis and the cost increase over the base bids for each one of those. So here you can see the cost increases over the base bid, and they range from around 3.5% to around 97%, or 104%. So in conclusion, roofing subcontractor bid data was collected for six roof types, A through F, covering the base bid and three repair scenarios. The unit costs were also collected for the partial roof replacement options. The cost comparisons using mean base bid cost and repair replacement cost for each three scenarios, enhanced fastening of roof deck, roof-to-wall connections, enhanced fastening of the entire roof deck replacement. In general, we can say that based solely on the three bids received, the wood deck system was the least costly system to bring compliance with the 2017 FBC EB 707.3.2, while the lightweight concrete on bar joists was the most expensive. As future work, we see setting minimum deck attachment criteria similar to wood decks and standardizing this for all NOA product approval tests. This will then eliminate non-applicability of the approved product for several field conditions and streamline the roofing permitting process. Number two, on properties valued over a certain threshold, let's say $500,000, requiring scenario B, the roof-to-wall connections and enhanced edge supports, up to a preset percentage, say 15% of the re-roofing cost should be spent on that. And then number three is conducting a cost impact analysis for future code changes before implementation, except in the case of live and our fire safety requirements. So, any questions? I know Mr. Salafine is online to, he's the engineer that came up with the protocol to help answer questions if you have any.
Thank you. TAC members, do we have any clarifying questions? Either TAC.
Jim Schock, I got some comments.
Go ahead.
First of all, you know, I don't think this really tells us anything. The whole project isn't worth anything because unless you evaluate the resiliency cost-benefit analysis, you really haven't done anything. I mean, this is no different. I mean, we all know it's going to cost more, but it's like me telling somebody whose house was damaged 50% by flood, they got to tear it down or raise it. I mean, that's going to cost more too. So I don't see this really addressing anything.
And also, this only applies to structures built prior to 1988. If they were built after 1988, we put in the exceptions that if it was built for those wind provisions after 1988, it would also be exempt. So I don't think we're really doing anything with this project.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions?
Yeah, Brian Slope, I'd like to address that last comment by Commissioner Schock. While on one hand, I totally understand that the damage to a house is done over 50% of the house, that you have to raise it or knock it down. This is not in a damage situation. This is someone who, a building owner who owns a building, and just by maintaining that building, having to re-roof the building to keep the building up, is being told they have to add this extra expense. And I got to be honest with you, I'd like to talk to whoever did these things, because I was not involved in it, but I can tell you right now that the numbers that are there are no way indicative of the standard, you know, values of stuff that would be put out on the market. If it was a damage situation, I could understand it. Hey, you know, you got to do this and that. But to go to a building owner who's simply roofing a building and saying you have to have this extra cost involved in it on a building that was not designed to stay, you know, stay down in the first place, it is a little different than someone who has some damage on a building.
Go ahead. This is Mohamed Dani. I just want to make sure that we don't expand the scope of the project. Clearly, the scope of the project is to look at the additional cost of construction as it relates to this code section. It was never really the intent to look at the benefits. So we are looking purely at what's the additional cost of the building owner for meeting these requirements of this code.
Any other questions or comments from TAC members? Either TAC.
Dan Laveridge.
Go ahead, Mr. Laveridge.
Dan Laveridge. Question as to whether or not anybody did any evaluation relating to costs necessary to evaluate the diaphragm of the roofs. In other words, engineering. It's a significant amount of work to do an evaluation of the diaphragm of a roof system. Has that been looked at or considered?
It's probably in the invoices, in the estimates.
I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure about your question. Are you saying that whether we consider the design of the diaphragm shear or the cost impact of the diaphragm shear?
I think he's talking about is, for example, before you do anything, you need to evaluate, an engineer would evaluate the diaphragm and see what needs to be done. And assuming that is part of the cost, the engineering cost for the evaluation. I think that's also is factored in.
You're assuming that, Mo, or you know that to be a fact?
I think it's in the calculation. So I would, Dr. Issa or the engineer who did the work, it's part of the estimate.
Yeah. It is in one of those notes in the bottom. There is a cost associated with that. Yes.
Yeah, $8,250. How much did you figure for the engineering costs on a building?
That's the line item there. Just in association with this, to visit the site, to take note of the conditions and do a diaphragm shear calculation, and to give a recommendation for how to strengthen it. That's why we budgeted $8,250 for that.
Okay.
That's per protocol, correct?
Yeah, per this upcoming protocol, yes.
TAC members, any further questions or comments? Hearing none, we would be open.
Gaspar had a question.
I'm sorry, who's speaking?
Gaspar had a question.
Go ahead, sir.
I had a question. I just wanted to know if the future work should address the following. That first item, you know, setting a minimum deck requirement for all the other decks, that's a pretty big task. And I'm not sure, I mean, we should be getting into that. I don't know if Mo doesn't, what Mo wants to say or why that was put in, but, you know, wood decks are pretty simple, and as everybody's using the ring shank nails and 8D nails, and it's pretty easy to do a standard, but, I mean, to try to go to all the other decks and try to make a standard deck fastening protocol might be a pretty big task.
I think what they're saying is that as a simple approach to the whole section is to maybe establish a specification standard for the attachment without going into the evaluation but then leave the evaluation to roofs where where there is certain specific cost. I think it's exceed 500 or something like that.
500,000, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they're trying to say. Hey, normally the codes, they do a lot of time this kind of, analogy, prescriptive versus performance. Let's just see what we can do with the prescriptive to a certain threshold. Just look at improving the decking and all that, but don't really require all this analysis and evaluation and the replacement and all that. And that's what they're trying to do, least cost versus the higher cost.
Hey, Mo? Mo?
Yes, sir.
Mark Vanel. As you look at the NOA, it's kind of to Gaspar's point, if you look at NOAs or Florida product approvals, most of the ones that I've seen where they where you have a lightweight insulated concrete deck or a metal deck or something like that, there's already pull requirements included in there to see if you actually have the value in that particular deck that's substantial enough to hold fasteners in place. I know the high velocity hurricane zone actually has that written in their code. But and if you actually read the product approvals that you're using, and they're probably part of the ones that the product approvals were. I don't know how they came up with the criteria if they're why they would be forcing people to use Miami-Dade NOAs throughout the state in different areas, and why they didn't use Florida product approvals. So I had some concerns myself about how this whole thing was kind of put together, but I just wanted to make that point that there are already tests required through NOA and product approval to address the deck itself. And if they don't meet those fastening requirements, then something has to be done with the deck.
Thank you.
And I would add that, again, with the NOAs and stuff, we get several complaints here in Miami-Dade that there's not enough fastening patterns, and again, some guy wants to use the 5/8 puddle well, the other guy wants to use tack screws, the other guy wants to use a Hilti drive pins. And again, it's each one should be tested, and it's a pretty big project. If you guys want to try to do it, I won't stop you, but it's probably more than what needs to be done for this section of the code.
Thank you, guys.
One of the
one of the concerns that we encountered in the field is a lot of times the NOAs, they are based on whatever the test panel was tested at, and sometimes that may be an extremely stringent in terms of screw pattern for the deck. And then when you actually go to a field condition, you find a lot of decks don't meet anywhere close to that, and then they basically have to reject so many NOAs. So on paper, we have a lot of choices, but in reality, we don't. That's where we were thinking maybe that could be a minimum guideline and have that established for all the test panels so that there is kind of a code prescriptive option for certain decks.
All right, you'd have to get the manufacturers in on that one, because the manufacturers are the ones that do the testing. And if they want to do all the testing for all the different fastening patterns, we'll be more than happy to accept them.
What about the manufacturers? Protect them and ship them.
Gentlemen, please state your name when you're speaking or asking questions.
I apologize. That was George Ebersole.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Karen. I'm sorry I'm late, but I'm really sick, so I was asleep. Sorry about that.
Thank you for joining, Karen.
Oh, Jimmy Buckner, when I get a chance.
We need to answer Dr. Ebersold's question, please, and then Mr. Buckner. Dr. Issa?
Would you repeat the question, please?
You were speaking of the manufacturers doing the pressing for steel or wood or something of that effect, but what about Tectum and gypsum?
Okay. Mr. Salafon?
Yes. Well, Tectum and gypsum, that is precisely the problem. If we have to start meeting diaphragm shear requirements, and especially if in those two cases, we are almost driving everyone to do the improvements, because it's going to be very tough to have the existing Tectum or the existing gypsum, especially in a re-roofing condition where you may find some of them are damaged, what have you, that they would meet the diaphragm shear requirements. So then you're driving everyone into the upgrade process.
Thank you, but that's kind of the point that I'm making, that simply have a building owner that wants to replace a roof on a gypsum deck, nothing wrong with the deck, and you're telling me he has to replace the deck just to put a roof on.
No, again, this is Arun Silipan. Yes, your point is well taken. The big difference between a damaged property versus a non-damaged property, where all we're doing is changing the roof cladding, but because of the requirement, we are driving them to do some upgrades, even though there is no quote-unquote damage at present. And that's a valid point.
Barbara, the attachment.
Thank you, Barn.
Go ahead, Sam.
Mr. Buckner?
Yes, I'd like to just review again in that the code the test for roofs and decks for Miami-Dade and Florida and Affecting Mutual, all of those tests are vertical uplift and down, mostly uplift, up and down only. Manufacturer chooses what they want to attach for whatever kind of deck, whatever kind of roof system. But all of the tests and the certifications are only vertical up and down. When you bring in the term diaphragm, that is talking about lateral loads, lateral, side to side, that are induced into the roof deck if that is designed to resist it from the walls going side to side. There is no side to side testing for roofing. For walls, yes, you can do an additional above code minimum test to get diaphragm for a wall system, although the minimum product approval is still in and out. Roofs can be tested for diaphragm. That is an entirely different calculation based on how much lateral load is going into the roof plane and how rigid it needs to be, and how many fasteners at the joint of the wall to the roof and throughout there. So that's why this whole thing is, to me, is ridiculous, that in order to put a re-roof on, we're introducing resisting lateral wall loads in the old buildings, which, can be very prohibitive. But just remember this thing about manufacturers testing is the uplift testing to try to make sure that the walls and roof and windows and doors don't blow off in a big storm is in and out, up and down. And when we say diaphragm, we're talking about lateral side-to-side motion and resisting that, and the calculations and all get 4 to 6 times more calculated than vertical up and down. So that's where the rub comes in here. And you would have to totally change the testing for uplift if you want to start requiring lateral diaphragm resistance as part of the product approvals, which the cost would go up there. I just want to kind of throw that out, that we're talking side to side with diaphragm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Average.
Go ahead, Mr. Laverich.
Yeah, I just got a couple of comments. There were some comments made about that just because we're re-roofing a building, we're requiring all these issues, and it drives people into doing different things and so forth. Well, that's all very true, but somebody should have thought about that when they wrote this section of the code, because the way the code's written, it envisions that you're going to have to evaluate an existing building and determine whether the diaphragm on that existing building is adequate to resist the lateral loads. And pretty much everything that Jimmy said is true. And to try to come up with prescriptive issues of prescriptive diaphragm restraints of roof decks, it's virtually impossible to do that. I mean, you can do it on a unit basis, but as far as how it relates to a building, every building is different because every building has a different geometry, different dimensions on the walls, different dimensions on the roof, on the spans, and so forth. And the whole idea of a diaphragm is to transmit the lateral loads of the vertical walls into some means of restraint, which is usually the sidewalls. And the calculation of a diaphragm action on a building is somewhat of a complicated issue. It's not, you know, not the end of the world, but it does take some time. And looking at the numbers that we're putting there for the engineering costs, I'm glad that I wouldn't have to be doing for that engineering for those kind of dollars, because it probably wouldn't make any sense. So it's a difficult issue, and yeah, just because you're re-roofing a building for maintenance purposes, now you have to do this enhanced diaphragm, you know, checking. It's a lot involved, and it's probably going to, you know, result in added costs to people that, you know, have a building that hasn't been damaged and you know, doesn't have any defects in the building as such from wear and tear, but yet it may not resist the actual diaphragm requirements of the building. Now, that's the way the code's written, and as I said, whoever wrote that section of the code should have understood that that's exactly what's going to be done, and it's going to have to be adhered to. It's not an easy task.
Shock here.
Go ahead, Mr. Shock.
Yeah, to sort of expand on what Dan and some of the others have said, I mean, you can't put lateral functioning into a product approval. The lateral design is an engineered system, and it can be a lot of different things. You know, your diaphragms are one thing. You can put horizontal bracing to carry the loads to certain points and stiffen columns, and there's a lot of things that you can do design-wise. So I don't think you can consider any kind of lateral support in any kind of product approval.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else on the line?
Yeah, Gaspar said
that. Go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, who would like to speak, please?
Gaspar has a comment.
Thank you. Go ahead.
It's been a lot of talk about when the code was written and or whoever put it in. I mean, the way we've looked at it here in 2007, in the commentary, ICC commentary, it was written that this was the best time and the most economical time to check this diaphragm. I think that only works out for wood decks when you're tearing off a roof and you're exposing the plywood and the wood deck and you can re-nail it. But for the other decks, it's definitely not the best time or the most economical time. And again, we can look at this. I mean, just to say that it costs a lot, I mean, what are we doing with that? I mean, are we going to change the code because it costs a lot? There's a lot of items that cost a lot in the code. But there could be other avenues that we should further study, because I agree with you. It's not the best section and you know, I don't want to tell an owner, you know, he's got a decent roof, he's got to evaluate it, and I agree with the two engineers that $1,000 to do an evaluation on these buildings seems very, very low. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments, TAC members?
Yeah, it's Brian Swarbrick. I just want to add, far as the cost and everything, I believe it was Mr. Lavers that said, you know, somebody should have thought about that when they wrote this section, because the fact that this was not brought up and the cost impact was not, there was no cost impact study done at the time. It was not financially vetted as far as the cost impact is concerned. Otherwise, it would have gone through this situation when it was put in the code. And to go back and this is as far as inspecting a deck with a wood deck, or the way is my understanding from several people that when this section was originally written, it came out to deal with plywood decks because it would be better make financial sense to do it at the time. But as the wind map changed and it became, and every deck became in there, you've now encapsulated everything to where it's not the best time in the world to do it, and you've sent it through. I mean, I just the idea of you know, it costs more, everything costs more, I just find it very hard to believe it by an unintended consequence that you're going to have to tell somebody they're going to have to incur this cost on a building where they're simply re-roofing a building.
Thank you, Mr. Swope. Are there any other comments or questions, TAC members? Hearing none, Roofing TAC will come to you for a motion on this report.
To accept the report.
To accept
any public comment?
Yes, please.
Belcher here. I would like to reinforce a bit what Brian just said. My recollection, when this provision was put in the code, it was to deal with wood roofs, which, you know, have a lot of fasteners, and it was an opportunity to correctly fasten the sheathing when you're doing a recovering or re-roofing. I don't think it was ever intended to apply to commercial buildings. Having said that, it is in the code, and that's the, I don't know that a report or a study or anything else is going to do anything there. Somebody's going to need to submit a code change and just, thank you.
Yeah, Joe, it doesn't, you know, as you know, the code is very general. It doesn't exclude or limit it to wood deck, and that's why we're here with this study.
I understand.
Leverage comment.
Thank you, Mr. Leverage. Go ahead.
First of all, Joe's comment about he didn't think that it was going to apply to commercial buildings, well, single-family residences are exempt. So it obviously doesn't apply to single-family because it says this section does not apply to site-built single-family dwellings. So if it doesn't apply to commercial, plus the fact that when you're talking about a wood deck, somebody's making an awful lot of noise on their phone. I'm not sure if that's, you know, if they try to keep that quiet. When you're talking about the fastening of a wood roof deck, the fastening is not an issue so much relating to diaphragms. I mean, the fastening is part of the diaphragm action, but it goes much deeper than that. When you're talking about the diaphragm action on a roof, you're not only looking at the fastenings, you're looking at the thickness of the actual diaphragm. In other words, if it's a plywood deck, the plywood has to be thick enough to be able to resist the lateral shear forces that are being transmitted across that diaphragm. And in many cases, in my experience anyway, we weren't able to get certain roofs to be able to resist diaphragm. We had to go to K-bracing and X-bracing within the truss system itself to get enough shear force resistance to enhance the diaphragm action, and the actual K-bracing and so forth that's put in there, it becomes part of the diaphragm, even though it's not just a flat plate of a diaphragm, but the whole diaphragm action is a horizontal shear panel that transmits the lateral load. So it's a complicated issue, and it's not just the simple thing of re-nailing a roof. It goes much deeper than that. And yeah, it's expensive, I agree. And you just have to understand that that's the way the code's written. And if you think that there was if there was something else was met when the code section was put in, I respect the opinion that you think something else was met but that's not what was written. What's written is a pretty strong, stringent requirement that as soon as you re-roof a building, you've got to do a diaphragm check on that roof. And that's a pretty significant item, particularly on large roofs. And since it sounds like to me that the single family is exempt, it would be commercial buildings and so forth. Just some comments.
Thank you, Mr. Laverich. Any other guests would like to make?
Yes, Silver's FRSA. Just a little history on this. This came into the building code as when the existing building volume was created, and thereby it bypassed a lot of the normal review. And, of course, one of those review items is the cost analysis. And we feel like if that had been properly vetted at the time that the existing building code was created, that this provision would have been eliminated because of all the reasons that you guys have just talked about. When you look at the cost of doing this, if it's able to be done, again, we have pullout values for a lot of these deck systems, but the actual deck and how they resist loading on some of these just doesn't exist, and there's a lot of those buildings out there. I heard just recently that, and I don't know exactly how accurate this is, but about 80% of the buildings in Florida were built prior to the Florida Building Code. So we're not talking about a few buildings. And yes, just with the recent exceptions, we got rid of the residential, but all other buildings this applies to. And our problem as roofing contractors is that, one, it says in 707.3, the requirements of this section shall apply to alteration work requiring re-roofing permits. And then it goes on to say where roofing materials are removed from more than 50% of the roof diaphragm, and that was what I was getting at earlier, roofing materials are removed from more than 50% of the diaphragm, a section of a building located where the ultimate, et cetera, et cetera. Number one, I think that's terrible language, where 50% of the roof diaphragm. Well, it's 50% of the roof is removed. The reason for this study, one, was to back up and do what had not been done when the existing volume was promulgated, and that was to look at some of the cost of this. We've already heard, even with these costs involved, some of this is just very hard to accomplish. So what we're looking for is how do we fix this? Do we get it out of the building code completely, or do we change the mechanism for when it's triggered? Should it be when there's a damage to the building that this analysis is done? But it clearly, I think, in almost every opinion that's been voiced, shouldn't be linked to a simple re-roofing project.
Thank you, Mr. Silvers. Any other guest with comments or questions? TAC members, back to you. Any further questions or comments?
Jim Schock here, one comment.
Okay.
It was mentioned that about the number of structures built prior to the Florida Building Code. There was an exception that we put in, I know, for it was buildings prior to 1988. So it goes back to 1988. Any buildings built after 1988 are exempt from this, as I remember it. And also, I lost my train of thought. This is a wind provision as well, so I don't think we can change it anyway.
Thank you.
That's right.
No. TAC members, any other questions or comments?
Chang.
Go ahead, Mr. Chang.
Thank you. Let's pull back a little bit to look at the bigger picture, right? It's been proven that in the past the hurricane caused devastation to our lives and economies, and that's why the statewide building code was created, right? To minimize that, right? And the devastation caused a statewide property insurance crisis. You do remember that everybody wanted to pull out of Florida, right? you know, from the structural design point, right, you know, you can design from AEC 788. Using AEC 788 or go back to the very beginning, you know, use the uniform building code. You know, that would put the building in the ballpark to what our current building code requires structurally. Maybe not 100%, but it would fall within reasonable. So
average.
Yeah. So hold on. Let me say something right quick. So I think we got to look at the bigger picture, right? You know. It's been proven that there's inadequacy on those older buildings, right? And they do really impact our lives and financial aspect. So how do we minimize it? And that's what the building code steps in, right? So we could say, okay, well then, every year we progress to a newer building code. It's going to cost a little bit more. There's no doubt about that. And the older building, especially, they were not really designed to withstand the hurricane. You know, that from the respect of design deficiencies, and you know, there's really not a process in place to check the design and to check the inspections. You know, so. I think right now is really a good time. I mean, whenever you do something to the building, maybe we need to consider that. You know, how is that going to impact the society if it fails? You know, and even it's going to cost more money right now to get it removed. But what happens if something does happen to the building? I mean, you also cause the business to close. In addition, you will cause the damage to the business as well.
Does that complete your comments?
So that's all. You know,
Thank
that's
you.
All I ask.
Mr. Madani and then Mr. Laverich.
No, let Dan go first.
Okay, Mr. Laverich, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a point of order to raise, and I'm enjoying the debate. As you know, I don't shy away from debate. I've been more than happy to debate until the cows come home. But we're way, way off track today on our agenda.
That's correct.
we're not here to discuss the building code. We're here to discuss review and accept the final draft report for the cost impact study that was done. And I think I'd like to get us back on track. I think we're way off track, and I would like to raise that as a point of order.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's what I was trying to say, what Roman is to say. That the whole discussions has to do with changing the code or changing the code requirement, which is not really the subject of this this agenda. Mainly, we are looking at the additional cost of construction, and that work is kind of what's before you is the additional cost. So I agree with you. You're correct.
Mr. Laverich, would you like to make a motion for the structural tack?
Yeah, Laverich, I'll make a motion. I move that we approve and accept the final draft report for the research project as submitted.
Compton, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Structural TAC members. Hearing none, we'll entertain a vote. All those in favor to accept the report, please vote by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Roofing TAC, we'll entertain a motion from you.
Yes, this is Boyer. I will move the cost impact study.
Second?
Gaspar will second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Roofing TAC. Hearing none, all those in... I'm sorry? All those in favor of the motion to accept the final report, please vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Ebersold opposed.
I'm sorry, sir?
Ebersold opposed.
Ebersold?
Correct. Opposed.
That makes us 8-1, and the motion still stands. Is there any other business to bring before these TAC meetings today?
I'd like to bring up an item, Jim Shop here, for the structural TAC.
Okay, sir.
Maybe new business or something, or something we should consider. We have a couple members who I really valued their opinion, you know, Jamie and Steve Strong, but they seem to, because of their duties at their jurisdiction, they seem to have some problems making some of the meetings. Maybe we should set some kind of guidelines for attendance that, you know, and I'm sure the people that are sending for the replacements are perfectly fine, but I don't know. I'm just throwing that out for a brief discussion.
We can look at it and talk to the chair and see what he thinks.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions, TAC members, either TAC? Hearing none, is there any public comment? We will now complete a final roll call. Please answer by saying here, beginning with the roofing TAC. Brian Swope?
Here.
Bob Boyer?
Here.
Mark Zanel?
Here.
Jimmy Buckner?
Here.
George Ebersold?
Here.
William Schultz?
Here.
Lorraine Ross? Karen Worsak? Karen? Richard Goff?
Sorry, I had it on mute.
That's okay. Richard Goff?
Oh, here.
Bert Logan?
Here.
Gaspar Rodriguez?
Here.
Thank you. And for the structural TAC, Jim Schock?
Here.
Warner Chang?
Here.
David Compton?
Here.
Chris Fartelman? I'm sorry, yeah. Michael Garacio for Chris?
Correct, here. Yeah.
Eddie Fernandez for Jamie Gascon?
Here.
Joseph Hetzel?
Here.
Do Kim?
Here.
Dan Laveridge?
Here.
C.W. McCumber?
Here.
Craig Perino? Dick Wilhelm here. For Steve Strong?
Here.
Thank you. It is 2:53, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, guys. This went very well, better than
this one, as I expected it to. So,
yeah, that's not really much to argue about.
Just fine.
Okay.
Erin Ross, she's coming over to bring Kelly's travel to me. So as soon as she gets it to me, I'll bring it down to Lair. Just not ready to be posted. Theirs. Because that makes me look like I didn't do them. And they're all done.
Yeah.
Instead of saying the minutes aren't done yet, aren't completed, they're not finalized.
Because you're slacking off and just don't
want
to do
it. That's why I worked at 9 o'clock every damn night I was gone. So that I didn't, you know.
That was just, I'm sorry, it's just been called for.
Hi.
Take care, kiddo.
Yeah.
Trying to get this stupid thing to...